I would like to start by thanking the organisers for bringing me in today. I'm by no means a physicist, and I'm somewhat of a geometer, but currently I'm thinking about a combinatorics problem. So I thought I'd spend today giving a bit of geometric motivation for the problem I'm thinking about. And most of my research is motivated by moduli spaces of curves. These are nice objects which hopefully many of you have played with before. But if not, here's a quick definition, I guess. So I'll be looking at MGN, the moduli space of genus G curves with points labeled from 1 up to N. Now, this is a nice space, but as geometers, we know the virtues of dealing with compact spaces. And luckily for us, Deline and Mumford got together and gave us this natural compactification of the moduli space of curves. And all we need to do is change the definition slightly. Instead of dealing with smooth curves, we deal with a slightly larger family of curves called stable curves. Again, we deal with stable curves of a fixed genus G and with N labeled points from 1 up to N. So what's a stable curve? A stable curve now, instead of being smooth, can have singularities, but only at worst nodal singularities. And we have this condition that each component satisfies 2g minus 2 plus n is bigger than 0. So it's a negative Euler characteristic condition. And if we set this up correctly, we get some nice space, mgn bar, and we know its dimension. The complex dimension is 3g minus 3 plus n, a number which we'll see again in the talk. Now this space is very complicated. Its cohomology is very hard to obtain, and so what we're interested in is dealing with the intersection theory on this moduli space with respect to certain characteristic classes. So what I'd like to do is define the characteristic classes we're interested in. One of the simplest constructions with the moduli space is the forgetful map. Clearly, if you have a genus G curve with n plus 1 points, you can just forget one of the points, and this takes you from mgn plus 1 upstairs down to mgn. So obviously, these spaces have quite high dimensions, so this is just a cartoon of what it might look like. And if we take a point downstairs, it's a genus G curve with n marked points. We'd like to know how many ways can we stick in one more point. So the fiber above a point downstairs is actually the curve itself that that point describes. In particular, that fiber has n marked points on it. So if you pick a number from 1 up to n, say k, you obtain a section from mgn upstairs up to mgn plus 1. And in particular, upstairs we have a natural line bundle. It's the cotangent fiber, the cotangent line to the fiber. So now that we have a natural line bundle upstairs, we have a map going from downstairs to upstairs. We can pull this line bundle downstairs, take the Chern class, and here we have a very natural cohomology class on the moduli space called psi k. And we have this construction for k equals 1 up to n, and it lives in the second cohomology of the moduli space. And so, I guess my story really begins about, how long ago? 20 years ago now with Witten. And Witten said, let's try and calculate intersection numbers with respect to these cohomology classes on the moduli space. So this is the aim of the game. And Witten came up with what I think is a rather amazing conjecture. If you write down a natural generating function for all of these intersection numbers over all G and over all N, this generating function is a solution to the KdV hierarchy. So the KdV hierarchy is an integral hierarchy which had been well studied for many, many years now and has very nice symmetry properties. So the physical intuition, with which Witten used to come up with this conjecture, was as follows. In two-dimensional quantum gravity, what we'd like to do is integrate over all of the metrics on a surface. So that's a difficult thing to do. In particular, the space of metrics on a surface is very, very large dimensional. So we'd like to reduce this problem to something simpler. So one way is as a sort of linearization. We can construct random metrics on a surface by patching together polygons and flat polygons. And this will give us a nice approximation to a random metric. So this linearization turns a problem into a problem to do with tilings of surfaces. And it's well known that when you want to count tilings of surfaces, this is related to matrix integrals. And through matrix integrals, this is also related to the KdV hierarchy itself. On the other hand, Witten also said that we could think of this by using a certain localization to integration just over conformal classes of metrics. In particular, conformal class of metrics is a point in the moduli space that we're interested in. So this is a well-known and quite old story now. And over the years, there have been several proofs. And I've just written some names up here of probably my five favorite proofs. And they come generally in two broad classes. On one side, on the left-hand side, these are the algebraic geometric proofs. And generally, the way they work is that they use the algebraic geometry to relate these intersection numbers to Hurwitz numbers. On the other side, the symplectic geometry side, you could say, Kincevich and Mirzakhani separately worked out that if you try to calculate the volume of the moduli space, you obtain interesting information about its intersection theory. So let me say something about Kincevich's proof. So Kincevich's proof was about 20 years ago now, 1992, I believe. And one of the main constructions in his proof was a combinatorial object known as a ribbon graph. And this is a very simple object. It's essentially just a cell decomposition of a genus G surface where you have n cells or n faces, and these faces are labeled 1 up to n. In particular, we can add a little bit of data to our ribbon graph to give it a metric. In particular, we can assign a positive real num to every edge in the ribbon graph, and this is called a metric ribbon graph for obvious reasons. And what this does is it endows each face with a perimeter just by adding up the positive real numbers along the edges around a face. So the reason why this is useful is this fact here. Once you pick some positive real numbers, B1, B2, up to Bn, and you can look at the space of metric ribbon graphs where the perimeters are B1, B2, up to Bn, and it doesn't matter which positive real numbers you start with, you'll always come up with some space which is homeomorphic to the moduli space. What this means is that if you give me a cell decomposition of a genus G surface, and you add a positive real number to every edge in that cell decomposition, this defines for me a smooth algebraic curve of genus G with n labeled points. So this combinatorial picture is what Kincevich used. And he worked out this very interesting formula, which I won't explain today. I like to call it Kincevich's combinatorial formula. Suffice to say that on the left-hand side is some expression which deals with all of the psi-class intersection numbers on the moduli space MGN. That's the left-hand side. On the right-hand side, we have a rather bizarre enumeration of ribbon graphs. And so really, the sort of subtitle to this formula is the following. If you want to deal with intersection theory on MGN, then it's related to enumeration of ribbon graphs. And obviously, this gives a this connection is what Kincevich used to prove Witten's conjecture. In more recent times, in approximately 2001, Okunkov and Pantarapandi teamed up together to give a different proof, an algebra-geometric proof of Witten's conjecture. And theirs was motivated by the study of Hurwitz numbers. So what's a Hurwitz number? You pick some genus G, and you pick a partition mu. So just a tuple of positive integers mu, and you ask, how many topological types of genus G branch covers of P1 can you find, where the branching over infinity is given by mu, and you have simple branching everywhere else. So this is a topological problem. It's a combinatorial problem, and we can count these up, and it turns out that there's a very special formula called the ELSV formula, and it tells us the following. It tells us that Hurwitz numbers can be written down as an expression involving the intersection theory on the moduli space. And here we have another connection. between the intersection theory on MGN and something else, Hurwitz numbers. More recently still, in about 2003-2004, Mari Mirzakhani looked at volumes of moduli spaces, this time moduli spaces of hyperbolic surfaces with specified boundary lengths. And it turns out, when you work out these volumes, you obtain polynomials. And not just any polynomials. These are polynomials whose coefficients are up to some combinatorial factor, intersection numbers on the moduli space. And Mirzakhani worked out how to compute all of these numbers, and hence, this gives another proof of Witten's conjecture. So we can see there's a connection between intersection theory and MGN and volumes of moduli spaces. Now, one of the nice things is that the way Mirzakhani calculates these polynomials is via a recursion. And in particular, I'd like you to note down the form of the recursion. If you'd like to calculate V, G, N, you need to know V, G minus 1, N plus 1. You need to know V, G, N minus 1. And you need to know the products, V, G, 1, N, 1, times V, G, 2, N, 2, where these two conditions are satisfied. G, 1 plus G, 2 equals G. N1 plus N2 equals N plus 1. So I guess I'd like to introduce this problem, which has been studied, well, it's a very old problem, but has been studied again recently by an Australian colleague of mine, Paul Norbury. And his idea was to count lattice points inside the moduli space of curves. In some sense, counting lattice points feels like an approximation to calculating a volume, and hence this should give us information about intersection theory on the moduli space. So in particular, let's make this definition. We pick some positive integers, b1 up to bn, and we pick a genus g, and we ask, how many metric ribbon graphs can we find with perimeters b1 up to bn, which make up a genus G surface. But now, instead of allowing the edge lengths to be arbitrary positive real numbers, we only let them be positive integers. And this defines the lattice. This is a combinatorial problem now, so we just need to count these objects. And as is natural in all combinatorial problems, it's easier and more natural to weight by 1 divided by the number of automorphisms. So, as I said before, this gives a discrete approximation to the volume. But again, another connection we find is that it gives a combinatorial problem which is quite similar to the Hurwitz problem. So it sort of interpolates between these two pictures, right? We know that there are two ways to get information about the intersection theory on MGN. One way through Hurwitz numbers, one way through volumes. And this sort of sits in between these two methods. So, as I said, this is not a new problem. This is something which we know, we've known for a long time now, can be calculated using matrix integrals. But I'd like to just take a purely combinatorial approach to this. So one thing we find is that we obtain a recursive formula to deal with these enumerations. If you'd like to know what NGN is, then you have to know terms of the following type. NG minus 1, N plus 1, NG, N minus 1, and products. NG1, N1 times NG2, N2. Obviously, this should look familiar to you, because this is just a discrete version of Mirzakhani's recursion. So once you have this recursion, you can start calculating what these functions are. They're going to be functions of B1 up to Bn. And it turns out they're not any old functions. They're almost polynomials. In fact, they're called quasi-polynomials in the squares, b1 squared up to bn squared. And we know the degree. The degree is 3g minus 3 plus n, which happens to coincide with the complex dimension of the moduli space. So here are some examples. What do I mean by quasi-polynomial, firstly? It means that if you want to know ngn, it's actually governed by a few different polynomials, depending on how many of the b's are odd and how many are even. So this k column is just really how many of the b's are odd. And so we obtain polynomials. When you have polynomials, it's natural to ask, what do the coefficients mean? What are they? Can we calculate them? And it turns out that in all of these polynomials, if you take the top degree part, then that top degree part tells you everything you want to know about side class intersection numbers on the moduli space. Since we have a recursion to calculate these polynomials, this really means we can calculate all side class intersection numbers in this way, and hence deduce, again, Witten's conjecture. At the other end, so we go from the top degree now to the constant term. If we look at NGN, but you throw in B1 equals 0, B2 equals 0, and so forth, we obtain the Euler characteristic of the moduli space. So I'd like to note, this is the Euler characteristic of the uncompactified moduli space that we obtain. And the proofs of these facts aren't very difficult. The first one is natural. This is why we cooked up this problem, because it approximates the volume, and we know from the work of Kinsevich and Mirzakhani that these volumes, well, they tell us about the intersection theory on MGN. And the second statement, it's just a calculation. If you write down this particular meromorphic function here and try and calculate the value at infinity, you'll find there are two ways to calculate it. One way will give you NGN of 0, 0, 0, 0, etc. And another calculation will give you the Euler characteristic. So I'd like to change gears a bit and talk a little bit about the topological recursion by Aynard and Orantin. So I know Vincent Bouchard will be speaking a little bit more about this afternoon. And so this is just a very, very quick, gentle introduction. This topological recursion, it's really what this arose out of the theory of matrix models. It's really what happens when matrix models meet enumerative geometry. So how does it work? You start with some input, and that input is just a Riemann surface with two meromorphic functions on it, say x and y. And what we'd like to do is produce meromorphic multilinear forms on that Riemann surface C, one for every non-negative integer g and non-negative integer n. And the way we do this is purely formal. We have a rule, and we just crank the handle and churn out all of these forms. The interesting thing about this rule is that it obeys, it's a recursion, which takes a form that we've seen before. If you want to know what omega gn is, then you need to know omega g minus 1 n plus 1, omega gn minus 1, and products of this type. So this should be starting to look familiar to you. And it should come as no surprise, then, that if you take the right Riemann surface and the right meromorphic functions, and you churn out these multilinear forms, then you should obtain these quasi-polynomials, NGN. The reason being because they satisfy the same type of recursion. And so it turns out that the right Riemann surface and meromorphic forms to take are described by the curve xy minus y squared equals 1. So I'd like to propose that there is actually a better problem that we should be studying, and that's to count lattice points in the compactified moduli spaces of curves. So let me tell you what I mean using an example. So let's take the example of genus 0 with 5 points. The moduli space M05, the compactified moduli space M05 bar, consists of curves of 3 different types. Essentially, you can have smooth curves, such as this one, or you can have curves with 1 node, or you can have curves with 2 nodes. Obviously, there's just one way to label the points, these points 1 up to 5. But when there's 1 node involved, we have 10 different labelings, because we can split the numbers from 1 up to 5 into 3 and 2 in 10 different ways. And when there are 2 nodes, it turns out we have 15 labelings. So what we'd like to do is calculate the contributions from singular curves. Now, the hyperbolic geometric picture tells us that when we have a node where two curves meet, we should treat that as a face with perimeter 0. And that explains all the zeros which occur in this formula here. So we have three contributions. One from just the smooth curves. This contribution here from the curves with one node. And finally, the contribution from curves with two nodes. And we can ask, well, does this give us anything valuable? What does this add to the problem? So we have some facts here. And the first is that when you calculate these, which I call NGN bar, we again obtain quasi-polynomials. Again, they're quasi-polynomials in B1 squared, B2 squared, up to BN squared. And again, the degree is 3G minus 3 plus N. And in fact, the uncompactified enumeration and the compactified enumeration agree to leading order. In particular, these new polynomials also store all psi-class intersection numbers on the moduli space. I guess one of the things that changes, though, is this constant term. Previously, I said when you calculate a constant term, you obtain the Euler characteristic of the uncompactified moduli space. And in this case, we obtain the Euler characteristic of the compactified moduli space, which, in general, is harder to compute. And here you see some examples. I'd like to quickly tell you about some questions which you could ask about these quasi-polynomials. And my claim here is that maybe this is the correct thing to study. Maybe this obtains more valuable information than dealing with the uncompactified enumeration. So the first, I guess, conjecture you could say, or the first question we could ask is, let's look at the coefficients of these polynomials. So if you don't mind, I'll just reverse. And you can see they tend to be positive rational numbers, at least in these cases, and in further cases that I've computed. And this seems to be an advantage over the uncompactified enumeration, where you do obtain negative numbers as coefficients. So an obvious question is, do we always obtain positive coefficients? And there's reason to believe that the answer to this is yes, although we don't know. And if these are positive rational numbers, the obvious question to ask is, what do they mean? What geometric content is stored in these coefficients? In particular, I told you, the top degree coefficients, we already know about those. They store psi-class intersection numbers on the moduli space. We know about the lowest degree coefficients, the constant term. That is the Euler characteristic on the moduli space. These are both calculations on the compactified moduli space. And I guess the hope is that the intermediate coefficients also store some interesting geometric information. So one reason to believe that is the fact that these seem to have a Herzebruch-Riemann-Rock feel. Perhaps they store dimensions of spaces of sections. Another reason is that these counts, these enumeration problems, are actually counting lattice points inside polytopes. And by toric geometry, we know that this should also give us interesting geometric information. So another question we could ask is, do these compactified enumerations, do these quasi-polynomials arise from the Einhorn-Arantin topological recursion? And again, there's reason to believe that the answer is yes. It should just be some small perturbation of the curve used in the uncompactified count. And it should be possible to write this down very explicitly. And finally, there's a whole circle of ideas here, starting from moduli spaces of curves, intersection theory, and branching out to matrix integrals, enumeration problems in the symmetric group, integral hierarchies, symmetric functions, and many other areas. And one thing that I'd like to explore are the consequences of these connections. And I'd like to finish there. Certainly. Okay. So. I guess what I'm thinking about is the natural cell decomposition via ribbon graphs of the moduli space. So I guess what this gives you is it describes the moduli space in terms of polytopes which are glued together. Okay. Unfortunately, these polytopes all don't glue together and sit inside some natural lattice, which is what you need to use this. Yes, the moduli space. So we can describe it as polytopes glued together, and I'm counting lattice points inside each polytope, and essentially adding up the contribution from each polytope. So it turns out there's no natural lattice in which all of these polytopes sit, but there is a sort of natural way that the lattice does sort of spread across polytopes, which meet.
Okay, it's not
just one. That's correct. So. If there is a connection to toric geometry, it's going to involve more than just the standard tricks. Just more than the standard tricks that we know about calculating lattice points and polytopes.
Is there anything special about the actual curves that correspond to those lattice points?
It's a good question. It's hard to describe. There are actually at least two different ways of passing from a curve to the associated ribbon graph. I guess probably the easiest picture is to use uniformization to describe your curve as a hyperbolic surface, okay? In which case the ribbon graph itself is embedded in the hyperbolic surface, and you're essentially using the hyperbolic metric. Apart from that, I don't really have a simple description of these curves, but it would be interesting if there was a particular interpretation of the ribbon graphs, which lets you count these curves in another way. Yeah. But yeah, I have to say I'm not particularly sure.